Hello, everybody, and welcome to Kentucky Ag Matters, a podcast designed to inform and educate both producers and consumers about all matters affecting agriculture. On this week's show, David, Jay, and Vicki will visit with Dr. Les Anderson, Extension Beef Specialist with the University of Kentucky. And as always, we'll wrap things up with this week's timely tip. Thanks so much for joining us. We hope you enjoy the show. Well, hello, everybody.
Hey, Jay.
A lot of wiggling going around over there. Y'all moving around in seats.
That's Vicki. I ain't got nothing to do with David.
I'm trying to talk, and everybody's looking and giggling. Mm-hmm. And it makes it hard to pay attention, you know.
We just want to see how good you are.
Yeah, I'm good.
Vicki got most of her talking done on the way up here.
I noticed that she's been quieter than what we're used to this morning.
She talked all the way up here, best I could tell, from the time we left Madisonville till we pulled in the driveway.
He learned a lot, though. David learned a lot between that stretch from Madisonville to E-Town.
We're in Elizabethtown this morning. So, yeah, you had a pretty good run to learn stuff this morning.
I did. She learned me something, that's for sure.
I always have something interesting to say.
That's right. That's right.
Well, we want to keep it educational today, though.
Yeah. I'll do my best.
Yep.
Got a guest with us today, Dr. Les Anderson. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Jay, Vicki, David.
How's everything going in your part of the Kentucky?
Good. Busy. We've had some rain, fortunately. Got off to kind of a bit of a dry start, you know, this summer. But we've not missed too many rains here lately, so that's
a good
thing.
Yeah, that's a good thing. Sure.
It's always good for ag when it's green in July, you know?
Yep, absolutely. Absolutely.
We've had a few large rains, some devastating rains and floods in our end of the world, but I was telling somebody earlier this week that I think I've caught the corner of every storm that has gone through. If it was 3 inches, you know, 30 miles away, I got 3/4 of an inch, which was about right. Last year it was not that way. I missed every rain that ever come through. And
Vicki got them all.
I got them all.
Somewhere around, went from the 1st of June to almost the 1st of August. Other than a real quick rain on the 4th of July that was just a pop-up shower, we didn't have any rain for 2 months. So
makes it hard to grow stuff.
It does, and growing stuff's what we got to do for our beef herd. We did a show that'll air probably about the time this show does yesterday, All Things Forages, that you might want to listen to. It had a lot of good information, and we know we'll have a lot of good information today, too.
Well, I'm sure the specialist you had on yesterday far exceed the one you got on today.
It's us three.
I was thinking the same thing.
It was us three.
Well, like I said.
Yeah.
How many years have you been at UK now?
I got my 25-year pin last year.
Oh, they still give those?
It's a little old thing, you know. I don't know where to put it yet, but it goes somewhere.
You could frame it up on the wall.
Nobody'd see it, really.
The good thing about that 25-year pin is that probably means you've been working 26 or 27, because they're always a year or so behind getting those things give out.
June 1st, 1997 is when I got here. So
I was thinking you were right after me. I started an extension June 1st of 96, so there was just about a year's difference with us. But
did you get your 25-year pin?
About a year after the fact. Now that was during COVID, during that time, right. So everything was a little bit delayed.
Yeah, is it same size as Les's?
Probably
bigger?
Not. I mean, I'm sure the specialist, yours was gold, right? Did it have a little jewel in the middle of it?
Several diamond inlays.
Mine was aluminum. Aluminum foil, actually. It's probably recycled.
We cut ours out of a Coke can.
Yeah, that's right.
Well, we got something to look forward to.
That's our pin. That's right.
I got 3 more years, and I'll get my pin.
When y'all get that old, you can get one of those. David, you might not ever see one.
I probably won't ever see one. And you know what? I'm okay with that.
That'll mean you've moved on to something
else.
That's right. I'm okay with that.
Well, Les, I know you've done a show with us before. Tell us a little bit about some of the work you've got going on right now and what some of the focuses you're putting on.
You bet. If you wanted to wrap up in one word everything that I'm trying to do right now with cattle, it would revolve around the word efficiency. Mm-hmm. And really, it's probably more efficiency of time than it is of anything else. And, you know, if you think about the beef industry in particular, you know, most of the beef industry, and you're looking at about 800,000 people across the country, that make up the cow-calf industry, most of them are small farmers. Mm. Okay, they got less than 50 head. And that means, you know, I mean, if you're profiting $100 a head, you're doing pretty good. Mm-hmm. And at 50 head, it's a side gig, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And so with the side gig, that means you got your own, an actual job that actually pays, hopefully. Wife probably got a job that pays. You got mm-hmm. kids. You got running around to do. You got things to do. And that side gig every now and then gets to be kind of pushed off to the side just mm-hmm. a little. And sometimes that side gig starts to cost us a little bit of money.
That's right.
And so, you know, this whole thought process came from the farm program. I know you guys remember the farm program when we had 147 farms, and the average size was about 40 head. And just watching those folks and working with those folks trying to, you know, they wanted to do better. They wanted to be profitable, but time was really the rate limiting step. And so everything I do right now is really revolved around efficiency, and mainly time efficiency. And so I kind of attack it 2, 3, 4 different ways. But if we can make people or help people to become more profitable and spend the same or less time, then we've really won. And I know you guys have all seen Bart Hamilton's a talk that he gave at the Kentucky Forage and Grasslands Council, but he had a quote in not in that talk, but another talk that he gave that, you know, really resonates with everything we're trying to do right now. And that's, you know, time is worth more than money to mm-hmm. me sometimes. And now I make twice as much and spend half the time. And that's really everything that I'm trying to do with my programs now is to work on that time efficiency. And if we can be smarter about how we apply our time, then we have a better chance of enhancing some level of production efficiency and sustainability.
You know, Les, I can't tell you how many times I've had this conversation with my son. You know, he's partners with on the cattle operation, and we're actually raising our bred heifers on his place, and we've got the mama cows at my house. And you know, when I was trying to, and I don't know, he's got three kids, he's got a wife that didn't come from a farming background, so it's all of that stuff's different. But I said, you need to do something a certain way. And he looked at me real quick and said, Dad, that's not very efficient. And I said, it may not be, but that's the way you need to do it. but what he was saying was right. For him, that's not very time efficient. But yet there's still, you know, I'm kind of like my dad, and I want things done a certain way because I think there's benefit to that. But we've got to figure out, especially with the younger generation coming on, we've got to figure out ways to do things more efficiently so they'll want to be in the beef industry.
Yeah, it's really the only way that we're going to be able to sustain beef production. And, yeah. You know, all of ag, I mean, you know, if you think, go back decades, it wasn't that long ago where almost 40% of the population was involved in agriculture. Mm-hmm. Now you're looking at less than 2%. Mm-hmm. And we're producing more food than ever. And so our ability to be efficient at production has really increased, but it's a different world now than it was then.
It is. Efficient production is important across all of our commodities. I think of even a lot of the producers that I work with that are full-time grain producers. You would think you've got 365 days in the calendar. They've got year-round to make decisions and implement decisions, but so many of them are so diversified now on and off the farm. I know farmers who are not only full-time grain farmers, they're full-time investors. They're full-time rental property owners. They're full-time real estate people because they're buying and selling, you know, the land that they're working on. So efficiency and efficiency of production is important across all scales. When I think about our beef producers, I forget the exact number, but the largest percentage of our producers in the state of Kentucky do have that off-farm employment.
85%.
85%. So they're trying to swing multiple bats, and they're trying to do this in a much smaller time frame than maybe what a full-time beef producer would.
And, you know, something that I think is pretty important to this whole conversation, too, is that I think most folks in ag and in the beef industry really have generational thoughts. Okay, they either are the fourth or fifth generation in their family that has farmed, and they want the next generation to farm, or maybe, you know, they're just second or third and they want the next generation to farm. It, you know, it seems to be kind of a deeply rooted in the DNA of ag folks that they want the land, they want the operation, they want everything to go down to the kids and the grandkids and so forth. And so with that thought in mind, if we can't find a way for them to be profitable, mm-hmm. and, you know, it's going to be difficult for us to be sustainable. And, Bart, the guy that I brought up earlier, his goal is to be a full-time farmer. He's a fourth generation farmer and he wants his kids to be farmers. They own 100 acres. And he rents some, but just wrap your head around that just a little bit now.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
It's a little tough, mm-hmm. okay? But he went from full-time off the farm to half-time off the farm by working with David Appleman, incredible ag agent we had up there in Bracken County, getting access to information, and then applying that information that he found in a fashion that he diversified and became efficient in all of his enterprises, because he's a multiple enterprise. He have to be right with
right.
Basically 150 acres is what he's trying to farm. You have to be a very diversified operation to be able to cash flow and be profitable enough that you can actually go from full-time off farm to half-time off the farm. And he, you know, his goal is to be full time on the farm, and you know what? I think he can make it.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's the important part. Is he's got a goal, and if you have a goal, you've got your eye on the prize, and so you're driven to do what you got to do to get there. And I think that's part of the thing that we have to continue to tell our folks, that whether they're just beginning, or especially those new farmers, those younger folks that is wanting to either stay in farming, or in my experience in Webster County, there's folks that may not have grown up on a farm, but one way to get into some kind of farming is through the cattle business.
Yep.
Is trying to buy ground with a house that's got a little ground with it. And then you put, you know, some fence up and you get some cow, and that's kind of how they get started. But you know, part of that whole conversation is, what are you wanting to do? What's the end game for you? Then we can start working about, okay, so how do we get from where we are now to where you want to be and do it as efficiently as we can?
That perfectly leads into one of my kicks right now. Is trying to help cattle producers become better small business owners. And so the first thing you do with that is a term called product market fit. Okay? Well, all right, what do you mean product market fit? Well, it's exactly what you said, Vicki. You gotta know what your marketing goals are, how you can make money in your area. Is it freezer beef? Is it feeder cattle? Is it replacement heifers? Is it seed stock? Whatever. How can you make money? Identify that. What are your actual production goals, not just raising calves, right?
Right.
I'm going to raise calves. Okay. That's not a goal. Okay. Have a market. Identify your market. And then raise your product. Guess what? To fit the market.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And that's traditionally not how we do things.
Yeah.
We usually just raise cattle, you know.
I like
and then
to
we,
look out my window and see cows.
We gather them up, you know, and take them to stockyards, and we get our check and go on, and that's good enough. But it's that honestly, it's not. If you want to make twice as much and spend half the time,
right?
You can't just gather them up, take them to the stockyards. You got to have some level of product market fit. How are you going to make money? And then raise a product that will make you money. And I'll give you an example. I'm going to go back to Bart. We started with him in 2015. He was calving year-round, literally had a calf every month. So the first place we started is, you know, when do you want to calve and when do you want to sell your calves? Well, in his operation, it was best for him to calve in September and October, and he was hoping to sell 7 weights in July and August. All right? So we started on that, and over the next 7 or 8 years, he's calved over a 55-day window in September and October very consistently. Well, he started to figure out, and, you know, this it's not real rocket science, that he made more money selling steers than he did heifers. Quite a bit more money. They weighed more and they're worth more. And so then he started doing an AI program where he was using gender sorted semen so that he could get more steers out of his cattle. And so this year in the set of calves that he sold, going back to the breeding, he had 37 females, he got 36 of them pregnant and 30 of them had steers.
That's pretty good.
That's good.
Yeah, it's really good.
And you know what? He was wanting to sell 7 weights into July 1st of August, and he sold 8 weights at the 1st of July.
Yep. Yep. Mm-hmm.
And at 1st of July this year, that 8 weight was worth some money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So when he put that check down on the table, Mama was kind of happy. You know? And so that's really what I mean by product market fit. How are you making money?
Mm-hmm.
Identify that first and then figure out how to maximize your ability to hit that market, to produce a product that fits that market, product market fit, something we'd never think about in ag. We just raise stuff, but we can't just raise stuff.
But you said something key there, though. He said, I figured out this. He figured something out because he was keeping records and knowing what he was selling and what he was getting for them compared to, in this case, steers and heifers. But having those records to know, to go back and see where he was consistently doing that, which helped lead him to a decision to make to help him be more profitable and more efficient. And doing the same thing on your input cost is also important, and being able to keep those records to know what you're doing and have that be the base of the decisions that you're making.
Right. One of the key things we did with the farm program is we taught folks how to analyze and utilize their records. And, you know, the method that we used then was not very efficient. We used Google Forms. And then we had it all, you know, you guys have all used a Google form, and it kicks it into an Excel spreadsheet type thing. And then you know, to create your reports, you got to do all this manipulation with the Excel spreadsheets. And it was time consuming, but extremely important to teach people how to use records to drive decisions. And I know you guys all know, but from all that, we developed an app, a platform to help cattlemen keep and manage records, and we called it Extend at the beginning, okay, X10D, but we've rebranded it to Stock It, because if you've got to explain a name, no matter how clever you think it is. Okay? It's probably not clever, you know? And so stock is something that people can wrap their head around, livestock, grain stock, even if you think about crops eventually, Jay. And, you know, we want the pocket thing. Not only you've got it in your pocket, but you're bringing more money into your pocket. That So there's a lot of different kind of hidden concepts behind that name. But and the slogan, I mean, our philosophy is farm forever. So you'll never see stock it without the farm forever next to it, because that's really what our users, I mean, I'm 100% convinced that's what our users really deep down in their DNA, like we talked about a little bit ago. That's how a lot of ag folks are really organized, is they want to find a way to be sustainable, and it's up to us to help them get there. And so what Stockit does, and you can get there by going to stockit.us online, it just connects you to information. You know, I mean, we'll create educational content. It'll be fed to their phone, and actually everybody will have their own little personal database that they can sort through and filter and find information quickly. And there's a little social media thing on there that I'm not too sure that folks will really take too much advantage of. But then the third component is the simplest, easiest data collection and management tool in the industry. And really it's all about time efficiency.
I was going to say, that's what I was going to bring up about how efficient. And younger folks are all about being efficient with their time. You know, and, you know, I've been trying to get my son on this deal for quite some time, and he and I just hadn't had time enough to sit down and me beat it in his head, I reckon, you know, kind of deal. But one way or the other, I want, because he can pull up those records on his phone and look at it, and it be that instantaneously.
Four button pushes.
Yeah. I mean, though, that to me is efficient. That to me is efficiency. So when I ask him, because I'm not the record keeper, and I despise that. I'd rather go out and do the work. I'm good with that. Just let me do the work. You take care of the record keeping. But when I ask a question, I want to know the answer, you know, and he could be able to pull that up really quickly.
Well, you know, it's funny you said that, David, because, I mean, that is ag. I mean, I swear, beef cattle producers, 100% of them take notes. We're great note takers. Yep. We write everything down. It's getting that report that stinks,
but
you know,
because
then you
got to
sit down with all those handwritten notes, and you got to figure out this, that, and the other, and do some math and other kind of things, and you're just like, eh, forget it. I don't have enough time. You know, gun smoke's coming on.
Well, you don't have enough time. If you start out really good doing it, and then you get busy, and then you get behind, and then that's where it stops, because you get overwhelmed because you can't get caught back up.
I keep a clipboard in my truck, and I write everything down, but then I end up giving it to my son and say, you need to put all this stuff in. So if I was doing it by myself less, it probably wouldn't get done, just to be real honest with you. I'd just be raising calves.
Exactly.
You know, but when he came on, we had to diversify into some different stuff, so we started doing the bred heifer deal. We started doing a lot of AI work, trying to get better heifers to be able to be in the bred heifer
product
sale.
Market fit.
Right. Exactly. And I mean, when you started talking about that, I thought, boy, that fits right in our deal for sure.
You know, I picked up on something you said, Les, on the first part of that, when you're talking about product market fit, and you listed a few different enterprises that a part-time beef producer could take part in. And the direct to consumer sales, or freezer beef as we've called it for years, is one of those that has taken off. COVID just exponentially made it grow as quick as possible. For those producers you had worked with for a while that had converted to that defined calving season, all of a sudden that didn't work for their needs anymore, because it put all of their product being born in that 55 or 60 day window, where now they need that calf or two a month. It's totally opposite from what we had preached for forever and a day, but that's a change you either need to make in your production scheme, or you start buying those calves to meet that fit every month.
I know this is going to shock you guys, but I don't always recommend a controlled calving season. That's all I ever talk about, but that's not what I recommend. One of my key cooperators in the farm program, The next dairyman, he had 200 beef cattle, and he took everything to harvest weight, and he set himself up. It ended up being like perfect divine intervention, planning, whatever you want to call it, that he had cattle ready to go and processors ready to go when COVID hit, and he was able to take advantage of that. But in his situation, how are you going to make money? He wanted to haul a set of fat steers or heifers to Hillsboro. He's in northern Kentucky, to Hillsboro, Ohio, and sell them one load every week. That's what he wanted. That's how he wanted to make money. Okay? Well, if you're going to do that, then you need to be scattered out a little bit more. And he's a total AI. He's an ex-dairy guy. Total AI. So we set up kind of a system where he could very efficiently manage his time in that deal. And that really leads into the next thing I was going to talk about, is that I'm kind of getting into precision agriculture. You know, we, even in the beef cattle business now, we have devices that are capable of helping us understand what's going on with our cattle, just by looking at our app on our phone. And the system we're using is called Cow Manager. It's available through Select Sires and different things. But basically, it's an ear tag that goes in the cattle's ear that's got an accelerometer on it. It's got a lot of, little electronic devices inside this little ear tag. I'm not a tech guy, really, but tells you where they're going, what they're doing, are they ruminating, are they great, what they're doing all the time. And this guy's name's Tom. He goes, I don't even really hardly have check cattle anymore. I just wait, when I wake up, I grab my phone, I pull up the app, and it tells me who's in heat, it tells me who's calved, it tells me if anybody's sick, and lets me know. And then I, instead of having to look at every single one, every single minute of every single day, he's got 200 cows plus the calves, and he's taking them all to harvest. And so and he's one guy. Okay. Just think of the time efficiency app has saved him. Yep. And we kind of did it as a pilot project. And he goes, if you guys take this away from me, I'm gonna go get it, because it's the key to what's enabling him to continue to farm. Because I think he's in his early to mid 60s, so he's not he's not super young, and y'all know, it takes some physical exertion to get out and every time we can cut some steps off of his day, every time we can save him a little bit of time. It works in his lifestyle, and it helps him in his situation. And anyway, there are technologies like that that are available that we're looking at. Eric Van Zandt, one of our researchers, he's working with us pretty hard, and he's a big data guy. He does a great job pulling all this data in, because every 20 minutes on every cow that we've had this in since 2018, every 20 minutes we get some sort of indicator of what she's doing. Okay, and it all feeds into this one database, and we've had close to 800 head cows plus feeder steers plus, there's a lot of cattle that are going through this. And Eric's really starting to wrangle all this data and doing a really super job with it. But it's extremely accurate in heat detection. It's extremely accurate in an alert for when a cow's calving. And so you don't get a premonition. You just get that she's doing it. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, you think, it'd be kind of nice if it gave me a warning. Well, also be kind of nice if, maybe you're 11:30, you're the job, you get an alert, and you can holler at your dad real quick or your neighbor real quick to go over and check and make sure she's doing okay.
Yeah.
Okay, versus having to wait till you get home
That you don't even know she's calving.
Yeah, you don't know she's calving. And so what Tom swears, this is the guy that was piloting this for us, he swears that it saves him about 8-10 calves a year because he knows exactly when they're calving. And he runs right out to that cow. He doesn't have to look for it. He's the one that really told us that it was extremely accurate. And actually, it's about 90% accurate according to all of our information. And so, you know, those kind of efficiencies really add up. And so his, you know, not only did we save him time, but we saved him calves, which then enhanced his ability to create revenue, so forth and so on. And so, you know, that's really, you know, the main thing we're trying to do is we're trying to get product market fit and time efficiency and trying to attack it from a two or three different angles with the ultimate goal of, you know, spending half the time and making twice the money.
And that's the world we live in right now. Yep. It really is. I mean, that's and it, as you have already said, you know, with the younger folks especially, they've kind of grew up with they've grown up with technology. You know, we didn't. And, you know, my kids still can't believe I went all the way through college without having a laptop. But, you know, you didn't. Nobody had one then. And you don't even go – heck, they give you computers now in elementary school. Yeah. So it's just a different world that we live in. And I think for us as educators, you know, with our producers and you all as specialists, we have to move in that direction if we are going to be able to still work with our producers, because that's the way it's headed.
That's the way it's headed. I remember when I was in graduate school, Vicki, and this just dates me, wondering if this email thing was going to catch on.
Right.
Because it was, at that time, it was just kind of, well, you know, I don't know if I trust it.
Yeah.
You know, if I trust it. Where's it going? Yeah.
Yeah.
So what, Les, what's the, you know, when you think about this, you know, when our folks that are listening, what's the cost on something like this? What do the ear tags cost? What do you have to have to make all of these things work? And what's the cost?
Yep. So the cost is going to be a bit limiting for a lot of folks. So to get the tag and to get your basic repro stuff, so it gives you heat alerts, calving alerts, it's $80 a tag, but it's good for 5 years. So
I'd spend that in a minute. If you're calving a bunch of heifers or anything like that, I think that'd be money well spent.
Now you can bump it up, and then it'll give you the health, it'll give you all that. I think it's like 160 or 70, but again, it's for 5 years. Each tag is good for 5 years. Yeah. The thing is so the tags, you know, they emit this signal, and the signal's picked up by a receiver, and then that receiver sends it to the receiver next to the computer, which then up online heads to the Netherlands, of all places, goes through their algorithms and comes back. Mm-hmm. Well, the real difficult part of this is those receivers. They have to be within 100 yards of a tag. Now, not all the time, okay? Just, you know, really once a day. Mm-hmm. But the more often they're near that tag, the more real time your data is. Right. And that's really what's been our biggest limitation is they've got solar panels hooked to batteries, hooked to the receivers that you can take out there. And those are $1,700 a piece. And you'll depending on how big your operation is, you're going to need several, right? Right now we're working with Josh Jackson to figure out how to hook it up to a drone and have it. You know, what I would love to have is I'd love to have a drone that had the receiver on it. This is just pie in the sky stuff that we're thinking about.
Right.
You program the drone at this time, and this time to fly over this field, and this field.
Right.
And yeah, I mean, data doesn't know the direction it's going, right? So it'll go up, it'll go over, and then you could have one drone collecting the data from all your cattle at regular intervals versus, you know, having these solar panel things, because we found out, you know, the battery packs on those solar panels kind of suck, just to be honest about it. And they've cost us yeah. some money, and it's not been as efficient as it needed to be. But when you think about, you know, if it's actually saving 5 calves a year on Tom's 200 mm-hmm. cows, then it'd be worth it.
Yep.
If it's improving his reproductive efficiency 5-6%,
yep,
then it's worth it. If you and you know, it tells you when they're sick.
Yeah.
And you go right out, you treat the sick animals.
How does he have his receiver set up? I mean, does he calve in a kind of a central location, so, kind of?
Yeah, or? So we stacked the deck using Tom. He's an old dairyman. He's got 4 huge barns and a limited outside area. So the cattle are basically semi-confined.
Fine. Yep.
I mean, they have access to go out into that 70-acre pasture. Right. But nearly every day, 2-3 times a day, they're in or around one of those barns. So we put those receivers all over the barns. And so they're in like up at David Appleman's, you know, David put up a indoor facility.
Yep.
And so, you know, if you've got them in a predictable place at predictable times and regular times during the day, you know, one receiver's really all you need. And if you got it happen to have it next to an electrical outlet instead of a solar unit, then it works incredible. But you know, it's not every place. I mean, gotta have Wi-Fi too, right? And so that's not every place.
That could be a real limiting factor in some places in rural counties.
Yep.
That could be a.
But I mean, that's
getting better though. That is something that is getting better.
Yeah,
though.
I mean, that's got real possibilities, especially if you calve. Say you have your heifers all in a kind of one little pasture there, and have a barn or something that you normally get them into. My guess is that you could put that fairly close to them. And I mean, just being able to save, I can't even count it on both hands, the many times that maybe we lost a calf that started calving. I always go at 4:00. You know, we feed them at night to try to get them to calve during the day, but it's not 100%. So I can, you know, both hands, I can't count on the times that they started calving at 3:00.
Yep.
And I got up there and I found the calf. But had I known they were calving, I could have gone up there at 3:00. You know, I could have had an alert on my phone or something. So, I mean, to me, the possibilities, those are great. And you would be much more efficient that way, I think.
And if you're AI-ing, of course, you know, this is product market fit too. And so, you know, if the product that you're trying to create to enhance your market includes AI calves, okay, whether it's heifers or steers or whatever you're trying to do, you know, when you're using AI to get there, it is nearly 100% accurate on estrus detection. And you know, if you're breeding on heat, I mean, it saves you all that labor of going out there and watching them. Yeah. And you still got to gather them, still got to, you know, all, you know, whatnot. But it improves your ability to get AI done quite a bit. Now, you know, we do a lot of timed insemination, but it still adds to our knowledge because we know which animals were in heat before the timed insemination. And so, like, if you're using gender sorted semen, we only use that in animals that's been in heat, and then we'll use conventionally processed semen for the ones that haven't been in heat when we're trying to do the time breed.
Right.
And so it's just, you know, we know when cattle come in heat after calving, so that we'll know their postpartum interval. We know which ones are cycling before the start of the breeding season. We know when our heifers are going through puberty.
Right.
You know, we've got all this information. We even have pretty good information that hopefully we'll get a paper out of it, but we kind of know when cattle are aborting. It'll give you some indication of that as well. And so, you know, it's amazing what you don't know.
Right.
Sure.
I mean, and that's one of the attractions of the beef cattle industry. You're not out there with them every day, but but you don't know what you don't know.
Right.
And you know, we're sitting here in this, we have this technology that will help us know more and make us more efficient. And so, you know, it's still a ways from being perfect, and sure. But it's definitely something that's headed that way. And you know, anytime I think we can save time and enhance our ability to produce, I think that's a direction we need to be headed down.
Yep. You know, one thing about technology, and I don't know if it'll work that way with the technology that you're talking about, but you know, we can look back and over time those products do get more affordable. You know, when they first come out is when they're the most expensive, and then over time it does become something more affordable that people can take advantage of, you know, and hopefully that may be the case. I don't know that if it will or not, but that seems to happen. Yeah. You know.
Well, there's getting to be more and more companies that are producing this technology, and so competition, you know, and capitalism. I mean, that's one of the things that's you know, made our country mm-hmm. great. So, I'm assuming that you're 100% mm-hmm. right, Vicki. As time goes on, we'll get more and more of these products available, and they'll be more and more efficient, mm-hmm. and then hopefully more affordable too. So
that's right.
Let's touch on, I know you're not the geneticist of the bunch, but touch on what AI can do for a beef herd, whether they're you know, trying to raise heifers, or whether they're you know, doing the whole, you know, providing beef for folks. I mean, what can AI do for somebody that's not already doing that?
Yeah, and so I'm going to touch on this two different ways. Number one, and this will probably surprise you, you can buy and use just as good a natural service sires as there are AI sires. Okay?
Yeah, I'm a little surprised.
Okay, I mean, you really can. You can find right. bulls
yep.
that do a whale of a job
mm-hmm.
and provide you the same genetics that you can get from AI. Okay, well, so then why would we AI? Well, every now and then, okay, we are not going to get a bull with 100% accuracy. All right, and so if we're looking at product market fit, you know, and I'm trying to produce a certain product to fit my market,
mm-hmm.
I don't want a bull with 30% accuracy that he can hit that product.
Mm-hmm.
I want a bull with 90%+ accuracy. Okay, and so you can buy bulls, use bulls through AI that you know what you're getting. They have produced thousands of cattle, and we've got data on thousands of calves, and we know what we're getting from that bull. Versus even the best natural service sire, you're looking at 40% at best. And so it's going to be years before you know whether this bull's actual genetic value is equal to what you thought it was. Was that prediction mm-hmm. accurate? And he could be better,
mm-hmm.
but he also could be worse. And so that risk, okay, is what AI takes away from it. Yep. It's a risk management tool to change that. And then the other thing that I personally think that's probably the biggest benefit of AI is we're able to crossbreed so much more efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I can't even, at one point I calculated, I was averaging one farm visit a day for several years, over a decade, okay? Out on farms, just hammering away. Very seldom do I go on a farm and they all look the same and we can breed them to the same bull.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, you got blackens and yellens and whites and reds and who knows what all combinations in there.
Yep.
And we're trying to come up with a crossbreeding program. Well, you know, if you're using AI, it's so much easier to pull out, you know, an Angus bull and a Simmental bull and a Hereford bull.
Yep.
Versus owning an Angus bull, a Hereford bull, and a Simmental bull. And so, you know,
and depending on what the cow's genetic makeup is, we can pull out different bulls that may work with her a little bit better. But we probably bred to 3 or 4 different AI sires ourselves this time, depending on what the cow's genetic makeup was. So,
and then, you know, to touch back on your all's personal operation, I mean, your product, your market is those heifers, okay? Mm-hmm. And you're going to, you're going to use different bulls for your heifers than you are for your, I hope.
Yes.
Than you are for your cows.
Right.
Okay. Because your cows can stand a little less calvinese.
Right.
Okay. And we could use a little bit more growth.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so it would be, you know, incredible if you could have calvinese and growth sires.
Right.
And you can do that with AI. It's very difficult to do that. You know, if you got a big herd, certainly, you know, more than one sire, you can have it that way. But, you know, for most of our folks that are looking at less than 40 head and you got one sire group, you know, it's just so much more efficient for that product market fit using AI than it is for natural service. And the other, you know, I bluntly like seeing all my cattle in heat on the first day of the breeding season too. It's kind of a hidden benefit.
Yep.
You know, when you use natural service, you typically just turn the bull out and there's no sink to it.
Mm-hmm.
And our preg rates and all that stuff go way up, really, when we, and so you can do the same thing with natural service. You can synchronize.
That's what I was fixing to say. We do that even on cows that we turn with the bull. We still synchronize those cows. We still want them calving in that first 30 days. So, I mean, we still do that. But, you know, to me, that's an efficiency thing that has come up in my generation is I don't want to check cows for 90 days. I want to check cows for as 40. Few as possible.
Yeah.
You know, if we can make it all work out that first or second heat, then I'm good because I'm done. That's what I like about the AI and the heifers, especially on the heifers, because you go up there for about 20 days, kind of 10 days before the due date, 10 days after, and you should have pretty well calved everything out. And that's a much shorter window than trying to do for 60 or 90 days on some heifers.
When you AI heifers to proven calvinese sires, you virtually eliminate calving issues.
Mm-hmm.
Stuff happens. Stuff always happens.
Right.
It's ag. Just as soon as it quits raining, you break down, right? It's ag.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Right. So stuff will always happen. But you can virtually eliminate calving problems if you use a proven calvinese bull versus every once in a while on that 30 to 40% accuracy natural service sire, you're gonna get a problem with calvinese.
Right.
You know, we think talking about just the benefits of AI, and we talked earlier about the size of our beef producers in the state of Kentucky. One of the really unwritten benefits I've always thought about, especially for smaller producers, is just the fact that they're not having to maintain a bull. They're not having to keep up a bull. If you've got limited size resources and the amount of acres you have, you still need to do something to clean up, but it's a lot easier when you're talking about 10 or 15 cows to do that cleanup AI as well.
Well, you know, Jay, actually we've got systems set up now where you don't need a bull. You know, we had a company develop a shoot side pregnancy test that's very accurate at 28 days, and we've come up with multiple rounds of fixed timed AI where you can pretty much eliminate a bull if you don't want to keep one.
Right.
And your product market fit is perfect because now you can breed to exactly what you want. And going back to Bart, you know, he needed steers. We used this system. He got steers, you know, and we'll use it again next year. He'll probably do this stuff from now on because 30 steers is a whole lot better than 15.
Yep. And he doesn't really have a market for his heifers much unless he's retaining some, you know. And I mean, if he's selling all of those steers, I mean, you know, that's the bottom line is the name of the game. When he throws that paper in front of mama and she said, "Boy, that looks pretty good," everybody's happy.
He's got a local guy there that he buys his replacement heifers from. He keeps a couple now, but that's what he was doing. And so his steer value was around $200 to $250 more than his heifer value.
Yep.
And you're just looking at product market fit, he wanted steers.
Mm-hmm. That's good information.
Yeah, very good.
Very good and timely information. You know, one of the things we always do towards the end of this show is we wrap things up with a timely tip. Knowing when this show's going to air, right around that end of August, 1st of September, time frame. We talked to Les a little bit before the show about what a good timely tip for that time of the month would be, that time of the year. And for your spring calving herds, it's time to pull those bulls. If you're right at that point now, if you want to keep that short calving season, it's time to pull those bulls out and put them into their storage for a while. And for your fall calving herds, you need to be preparing for your calving season by gathering up all your necessary equipment, making sure you have your vet on call and all of your pens ready. So, Les, anything you want to add to that? And
no, I mean,
expound on?
The last thing you said there, Jay, might be the most important, is make sure you have a great vet-client relationship, you know, and I mean, they need to know you before you call them.
You it know? Works better that way.
And, you know, there's a lot of different reasons for that, but, you know, there are partners in the beef industry and in the livestock industry. And, you know, make sure you have a great relationship with your veterinarian. And and that way, when you have a problem there, you got a chance to get them out and get it going. And sometimes I think our newer folks in the livestock industry kind of overlooked some of that, maybe. So,
you know, even if you do a lot of your own doctoring, you still need to have that, because there's going to be something that you run up on that you can't handle.
Right.
And you want to be able to get a hold of somebody that can handle it.
You know, even just to get those vaccines nowadays, we're past that point of having to have that prescription, and you have to have that vet-client-patient relationship to be able to obtain that prescription. So having a good relationship with your vets just as important as having a good relationship with anybody else in your industry.
Absolutely.
Sounds good. Well, Les, we appreciate you being here with us today. Good to see you again. We want to thank you for this week's information, and thanks to our listeners for joining in. We hope you've enjoyed our show, and we'll make plans to join us again next week for our next episode. And until then, remember, Kentucky Ag matters.